Welcome, men. This is our final episode in the series on marriage entitled A 21st Century Marriage. This morning's topic, out of this morning's presentation, recorded at our typical Saturday morning study, but it was also a breakfast, so there's a larger group of men than normal. You'll hear a little bit of additional background noise and some vigorous laughter throughout the morning. This morning's topic is entitled In-Laws, Outlaws, and Other Laws. And it's, I think, a fitting topic to discuss at this time of the year when families gather, and sometimes there are those additional stressors that come into our lives due to the holidays and due to having extended family come to stay with us for a while, or perhaps we go to visit them for a while. Family cultures are different. There's always challenges in merging family culture, even if it's only for a day. So this morning we're going to look at the key factors, I believe, that can help each of us to find purpose and meaning and importance in visiting family members, when frankly I think at times we'd rather avoid that messiness altogether. Now, if you've been blessed with a great family, a great extended family, if you find the relationship between you and your father-in-law, or you and your mother-in-law, or you and your wife's side of the family to be really great, that's fantastic. But even if that's true, I believe there's some things that you'll gain from listening to this morning's recording, because I think most of these principles are great in the workplace. Most of them apply even in our own homes, and they certainly apply in our dealings with our next-door neighbors and the like. So as you listen along, don't only be looking for applications in your marriage and in your family settings, but also be looking for the important applications outside that. Thanks for joining us again, men. See you again next week. All right, gentlemen, let's get started. If you find that it's going to be difficult for you to see if we write anything on the board and you want to sit over here or just lean against the counter, whatever works best for you. So just a couple of quick announcements and then we'll get into this morning's topic. We're starting a new series next week. It's called Six Things Every Man Should Know. We're going to look at things like friendship, why that's important, what your friends do to take you places that you might never have expected they would. We'll look at managing your finances. We'll look at things like leaving a legacy and planning for that now. You know, when you use the word legacy, it's usually talked about when someone's about 40 or 50 years old and you start to think about it then. But in reality, if you want to plan to leave a carefully thought through legacy, you'll probably think about that late in your 20s and your 30s. And you'll plan your life accordingly. So we'll look at things like that. There's some other topics. I'm not going to go into them all now. But this is good stuff. As a matter of fact, if you are under the age of 35 and you have the opportunity to be here for six, I always say series are going to be about 6 weeks, and they usually end up, don't laugh at me, they usually end up being, yeah, 7 or 8 or something like that. But I've made myself a promise that at very most it won't go over 8. So how's that? It's 6 things that'll probably turn out to be 8. That's the way it is. All right. Next breakfast we do will be toward the end of January. I believe it's the 25th of January. That is the big breakfast. So that will be done inside there. This is just warm up. We do this every 3 months just to give you a chance to get out, build some new friendships. This is sort of like open house for the study. So if you have never been to this Saturday morning study and you've always been curious about what it was like, this is what it's like, minus the food most weeks. We have you out of here by 9 o'clock. We start a little later for those of you who wanted to. Here's the reason that I hear from a lot of men. Saturday's the only day I get to sleep. So we try to accommodate that at least once every 3 months. The rest of the time, we really don't care. Get up. So that's the morning's announcements. There's a little jar or bowl or something at the back. If you feel like kicking in something for the cost of the food this morning and you haven't, please feel free to do that. All right. So our topic for the morning, we're wrapping up the marriage series. And in a way, this is connected with marriage. But in a way, it goes far beyond marriage. We got holidays coming up, Thanksgiving, Christmas, maybe there's other parties and events, and every one of us probably has some family gatherings that we go to. Just quick show of hands, how many of you are ever uncomfortable in family gatherings? That's actually more than I thought. Okay. Honest show of hands here. How many of you are ever uncomfortable, if you're married, with your wife's family? It's funny, it's a lot of the same hands, too. Okay. So your wife comes home one day and she says, "Oh, we're going over to my mom and dad's house for dinner, or we're going over to my sister's house for dinner," or whatever. And what are the emotions that start to well up within you? And I really did miss you. Fear is one of them, but what else? I mean, come on, we're guys, so what do we do?
Start planning on how you're going to get through the next 5 or 6 hours.
Okay, well, it's either you start to plan how you're going to get through that, or you search valiantly for any desperate excuse that you could use as to why you can't possibly make it that day. Tell me that's not true. So a few weeks ago, and I have to blame Bob again, wherever he is. Where are you, Bob? There you are. It was his idea to do this series, or not this series, but this particular topic. What is it like to relate to difficult in-laws or difficult family members?
Can I say for the tape? Yeah, I was talking about my first set of in-laws, not my current set.
Okay. Reasonable deniability. It's always helpful.
Fear.
So, some of you may not be married, so you think, well, this doesn't have any application to me. But what we're going to talk about this morning has work application. It has neighbor application. So there's a lot of cross application, but specifically we're going to talk about how do we get through difficult family settings. So I shared with you a little bit about what Bob told me. He said that when he was young, and this is Bob's first wife that we're talking about now, and he said that whenever he would go over to his in-law's place, he would look forward to the chance to feed the kids, do something to get out of the room. I dare say perhaps if he was young enough, if the kids were young enough, he might have even looked forward to changing diapers. That's how desperate it was, just so he could get away from the in-laws.
Yes.
He's nodding his head, yes. See, that's an affirmative. Well, here's my story. I didn't have a great relationship with my in-laws. I was, I don't know, 24, I think, when I got married, 25, something like that. And I remember the first few times I went down to visit my wife's parents in Virginia. And she didn't get to see her parents all that often, so it was an event. It wasn't an afternoon, and it was Virginia, so there was a drive, so it was at very least a weekend. It was usually a long weekend. And yes, it was really long, but that's not what I meant. I meant it was just a started sometime Friday and ended Monday. I started to walk a lot. As a matter of fact, when I knew that I was going to be at their place for long periods of time, I would go out and I would buy extra, and this tells you how long ago this was, I would buy extra cassette series so that I could pop them into a Walkman and listen while I walked for hours and hours and hours, anything to keep me out of that house. And it's not that they weren't okay people. I mean, they fed you well. They were, I guess they were civil, I think. But here's what I remember. I remember every time we came home, my wife felt emotionally drained and beat up by the process. I felt demoralized by the process. We pretended to enjoy the whatever that was that we did when we were there. And I remember it usually took my wife 3 to 4 days after she got home to recover, because sometime in the weekend there would be some event, some confrontation that made her feel awful. How do you get through this? I mean, the easy explanation is, well, you just don't visit your in-laws a lot. And it was really great that they lived in Virginia, thankfully, instead of, like, I don't know, a town away. Well, here's why I said we're going to deal with some things, I think, that apply to every situation. There's 4 words that we're going to use this morning. They're the 4 words that I think all of us really would like to be able to offer. How do we live with Peace is the first word. The next word we're going to use is mercy. Grace. And finally, love. How do we live with those four conditions? How do we offer those to other people that we have to interact with? So here's the first word, the word peace. And I'm not even thinking about the absence of conflict in relationship. What I'm thinking about is the inner turmoil that we all experience. How many of you have ever behaved in a way and then later on kind of felt bad about the way you behaved? And yet, you kind of know why you behaved that way. And here's the reality, and this is why we start to dread these events. I know that I shouldn't behave in a certain way, but it seems as if something in those people just absolutely brings this response out in me. And no matter how much I try to avoid it, I respond that way. And then later I have to deal privately, quietly with the results of that. Or if your in-laws live a long way away, you've got that car ride home. And you know what that car ride sounds like or doesn't sound like. All right, we've all had that car ride. Well, sometimes it's quiet. You're glad when it's quiet. I mean, you know there's smoldering and smoke in the seat next to you, but at least it is quiet, right? Sometimes it isn't. Some of you are looking at me like you just don't understand. Let me read a few thoughts here. The Lord spoke to Moses saying, "Speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, thus you shall bless the people of Israel, and you shall say to them." Well, the first word I'd like us to remember is, this is Moses talking to Aaron. Who's Aaron? Aaron is a priest. He's an assigned person. He is God's designated person who is to bless, help, and encourage the people. Right now, in the New Testament, we read that each of us is priests. But that's our role. That when we become believers, that God assigns to us the role of priest. So whether we like it or not, here's what God is calling us to do. He is calling us to be the person in every circumstance, in every situation, that invites God's blessing into that setting. And this is not easy to do. Nobody's saying it is. But listen to these words. The Lord bless you and keep thee. The Lord make His face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. So shall they put my name upon the people of Israel, and I will bless them. Okay, so this is the job of the priest. These are representative words that he is to offer over the people. So when you walk into this awkward social setting, I know this is difficult, but could all of us imagine that instead of being there to endure something, we were actually appointed by God to be in that situation to bless and encourage other people. To invite God's blessing. Because look at what it says. It says, so shall you put my name upon the people of Israel and I will bless them. In other words, if the priest doesn't do his job, the implication is the people are not blessed. If we are priests then, and we don't do our job, it means that the family environments that we walk into, that we have a choice to bring God's blessing down onto, are not blessed as a result of our refusal to do what we're called to do. Okay, now I know some of you already don't like me and you'd like to go home, so let's move on. Let me read a psalm for you here. Let me hear what the Lord will speak. For He will speak peace to His people, to His saints. In other words, God gives us a chance to speak peace into family situations. But then the tail end of the verse says this, but let them not turn back to folly. So the implication here is that there are things that each of us has done in our family environments, in those difficult environments, that have brought difficulty. That it's not all the other people. Or even if it is the other people, even if we can say it's 99% the fault of the other people. We still have a choice to bring blessing into that circumstance if we don't return to our former folly. What's the folly? And I think that's a question that each of us has to ask. What is the folly? What is the misunderstanding? What is and folly? Who perpetrates folly? Huh? The fool. And what is a biblical definition of a fool? It's not what we often think it is today. What is a biblical definition of a fool? It's a person who refuses to listen to wisdom. He thinks he knows better than everyone around him, and he knows better than God. That's the definition of a fool. It doesn't mean a moron or an idiot the way we might read into it. It's simply a person who is rigid in thinking, hard in heart, and refuses to embrace the truth. So the first thing that God offers us in every circumstance is the opportunity to extend peace to others. What does biblical peace mean? Because we tend to think in modern day society that peace is simply the absence of conflict. We've talked about this in this Saturday study already. What is peace? The way God would define it. Anybody? Okay, an inner security, an inner wholeness, an inner wellness and fullness. In other words, kind of to borrow like one of those old hymn phrases, it is well with my soul. Isn't that honestly what we want? This is kind of what we're talking about here with this word peace. We want to be at peace when we go home from this event. We want to not dislike ourselves. And we want to know that we brought some blessing to some other people. All right, well, if that's the first word that we're looking at, let's move on to the next one, which is mercy. What does mercy mean? That might be a way that mercy is demonstrated. Anybody? Well, there's two words that we tend to use synonymously, but they have significantly different meanings. One is mercy and the other is grace. What's the difference? Okay? Mercy is... Did you read that somewhere? See, that's a good answer. Mercy is not giving someone what they truly deserve. Okay, we're going to come back to the honest questions here again. How many of you think that there is somebody in your family, somebody in your extended family, someone in your wife's family? See, you already know where this is going, right? And they got something coming to them. And you'd like to be the administrator of that something. Mercy is simply withholding from someone what they richly deserve and ought to get. Let me read a verse from James here. So speak and so act as those who are to be judged under the law of liberty. For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. But mercy triumphs over judgment. So James is talking to believers and he says, and he assumes that everyone is an active Christ follower, and he says, the law that you live under every day, the law that you take for granted as a believer in Christ, is the law of liberty. And in that sense, how does he mean that? What is the law of liberty? It means that you are freely accepted by God, that you don't earn God's favor, you don't earn anything from God as the result of your continual, consistent performance. That you live in freedom, that you live in a sense of liberation, that you don't need to strive to earn God's favor every day. But then look at what he says. For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. There's another phrase that maybe some of you are familiar with. It goes something like this. Mercy is what we want for ourselves. Judgment is what we want for others. Okay, so honestly, is that true? Because when we assign a position, a motive to our in-laws, have you ever thought, well, they're idiots. I mean, no intelligent person, and then we go off the deep end, right? No intelligent person could think like they do. they just have it in for me. They don't like me. Well, what's that? What's really happening there? What I am doing is, who's really being convicted there? Because whose motives am I assigning to them? You are.
There are only offenses that you take along with you.
Leave my family out of this, okay? And just for your information, okay, God was merciful on me. My father-in-law has since moved on. Is there a situation where you can extend the benefit of the doubt to those around you? Have you assigned not only behavior to them, but have you assigned the motive underlying the behavior? See, it's one thing when Josh over there does something to me and I say, well, I don't know, he was rude to me. But then when I go on to say, well, he's just a social misfit and a jerk and an outcast, that's entirely different. I mean, it might be true, I don't know, but... See, I don't know the motive that's going on inside of him. I don't know what caused him to do that. But we do that all the time. We assume that people do things based on a set of motivations that we've put onto them, none of which may be accurate. Alright, so we've talked about mercy. The next thing is grace, and this is even harder. What is grace then? If mercy is withholding from people what they really deserve, what is grace? That's it. It's giving them what they don't. Let me read a couple of verses from Paul here. Put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts. Okay, so this is apparel, if you will, for the soul. Put on compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. I'm going to read them one more time. Beloved, put on compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. Do they sound like masculine qualities? Just be real here. They don't, right? Are men really this? Are they people with compassionate hearts? Are they people that are meek, humble, and patient? Yeah, here's the deal. I challenge you to be all this for a day. Go on, just see if you can do that for one day. As a matter of fact, I'll make it easy. Do all of that for an hour. Now do all of that for an hour in the presence of someone you don't like. How long would you last? So the reality is when we look at these words, they sound so feminine. They sound like something we cannot possibly imagine we would ever want to do. And yet the reality is these are incredibly difficult qualities to demonstrate toward anybody. John's talked about this a couple of times. This, your character under control to the extent that, okay, mercy then is not telling someone what you really, really, really want to tell them. And then what is grace? Grace makes it even worse. It's not only not telling them what you think they richly deserve to hear, with a few expletives thrown in just to make it very clear to them exactly how you feel. Grace is instead saying something encouraging or blessing toward them. So I don't give them what they really deserve, but instead I give them something that they have no right to. See, when the gospel writers talk about the grace of God, what they're really reminding, the entire gospel message is this: God went out of His way to act in our best interest when we had absolutely nothing in us that made God say, "Ooh, they're a really cool group of people. I think I would like to do something good for them." So when God calls us to be that, this is not unmasculine behavior. This is some of the hardest stuff that you and I will ever do. Colossians 3. I'm going to read on after this. Let me start over again. "Put on then as God's chosen holy ones and beloved." Well, that's good. Let me back up and just read that again. "Put on then as God's chosen holy ones." It's that priest idea again. You're God's representative. He's appointed you to be in that position. He could have sent somebody else. He sent you. I know at that moment, maybe you're not receiving that real well, but He could have sent somebody else. Instead, in that social setting, He has sent you. But you're also His beloved. He's going to be with you every step of the way through this. And so this is what you put on: a compassionate heart, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. "Bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you." He packs so much meaning into this that we gloss right over that. How would you actually forgive someone if you forgave them the way God has forgiven you? Quickly and unconditionally. And completely. Okay. How many of us really forgive that way? I'm just saying, this is a lot harder. This is a lot more masculine than we give it credit for. "Forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you, so you must also forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called." So in the end, that's what love looks like. And the result of that, the result of desiring this, extending these two, doing it not because we have to, but because God asks us, takes us right back up there and gives us the peace inside. It gives us a calm ride home. Let's put it that way. On the trip home from the in-laws, you don't hate yourself, you don't hate your wife, you don't hate your in-laws. I'm just trying to make it as simple to understand as possible. I'm not going to make it complicated. Some of you know what we're talking about here. All right, let me move on here. Give you a couple of quick points. If you can bear with me for about 10 or 15 more minutes here, we'll be done. So let's take some really specific steps to implement this in our life. Every social setting that you walk into, people have expectations for you. If you go with your wife has an expectation for you. You go to an in-law's place, an aunt, an uncle, whatever it is, they have expectations for you. If you take your kids along, your kids have expectations. Complicate that by the fact that God has expectations. We just looked at some of God's expectations, and you have expectations. With all those expectations in that room together, what is the likelihood that everybody's expectations are going to be met? Let's just be real here. I see a zero. How do you resolve that tension? Family has expectations. Wife has expectations. Kids have expectations. God has expectations. You're at the bottom of the list, but you have expectations. How do we reconcile the difference in those expectations? When Where do your first priorities lie? That's the question. Perhaps. Remember what we. This is what we're. This is what we're after, right?
God paid it forward to me that I should pay.
Whose expectations should you be most concerned with meeting? Now, why? See, because if this were a human chain of command, we'd say, "Oh, well, we got to meet God's expectations because He's at the top of the heap." Is that really why? We will stand the best chance of. Let's not be unrealistic. You still may not make your in-laws happy, right? You just may not. Your kids may still think you're a moron and wish that they had other parents. That may happen. But by meeting God's expectations and having your internal character aligned with what God wants, remember you're a priest, you're chosen, you're a holy one set apart to do that. By meeting God's expectations, which should be aligned with your expectations for yourself, you stand the best chance of keeping this. Now, quick question. How do you behave when you don't have that anyway? Because this sounds selfish maybe. Oh, is that what I'm doing? I'm trying to behave to make myself peaceful on the inside? How do you behave when you are in turmoil on the inside? We have a program for that. All right, so here's your action step to take away from part number one here, point number one. Decide who you are. That's a choice God gives to each of us. You don't have to be God's representative. You can leave that at home in a box when you leave the house if you want to. Decide who you want to be and whose you want to be in every situation. And do not leave the house thinking, oh, I have to do this for God today. Choose to do it for God. Choose to do it for yourself, or don't do it. And I really mean that. Because if it's something that you feel under obligation every time, oh, I'm going to be God's servant in this case, you're probably not going to end up being a very good servant anyway. Part number two, in every circumstance, you have choices. I want you to think about some of the most difficult social settings, family social settings, that you have been in so far. What were the choices that you had open to you that became obvious later, but maybe you didn't see at the time?
You don't have to respond to everything, you know? You just don't.
Any others? Okay, somebody throw out an example. Come on, we need a story. We need some dirt from somebody else's life. And the crowd over here is laughing a lot, which means they get it, right? There's some real stories to be told there. I know there are. Okay. Other choices that we have. Here's a list that I have. You can be a student of almost everyone. Almost every single human being has something to teach you. And I know some of you are rushing to the point, yes, they can teach me how not to behave. All right, that's true. But almost everyone has something that if you are humble enough, you can learn something from them. Look for something that you can learn, even from the most, I'll call it, obnoxious of people. I got to say, my father-in-law had some things to teach me. And as I got a little older and I lost a little bit of my, I know this is hard to believe, but I was a little bit irritable and had a hard edge when I was younger.
Turn around.
I wasn't quite the gracious and kind person that I am today.
Wow.
Point number two, in the choices, you can choose to be a servant in every situation. How does a servant distinguish himself from someone who's a guest? So when you're a guest, you're looking to get something. When you're a guest, you're comparing what you wanted. Again, this is part of your expectations. What expectations does a servant have? When he goes into any setting, what are the expectations that a servant has? What's best for other people? Now, why is this helpful? Because this sounds like, what, am I the doormat for everybody? No, not at all. But in a difficult situation, if you have a choice between working yourself up and getting aggravated over the fact that people are just, they don't behave according to your expectations, or you could go in there and you say, how could I help? What could I do to make this today easier for you? Look, given a choice between two things, which would you rather do? Go in there with a servant's heart and try to do something. I'll tell you what, when I went to my in-law's place, I got really good at washing dishes. I mean, even to the point that, well, look, you couldn't walk all the time, right? I had to come home and eat once in a while. Well, that's it. And they would actually come into the kitchen and say, we have a dishwasher here. Why don't you... Got this. But in that process, you do get to give a little bit of yourself. Here's something else. Demonstrate thankfulness. Demonstrate appreciation. Is there anything that you can work your way into sincerely praising them for? Remember what I said, this applies even in a work circumstance. And I know sometimes we're thinking, boy, I can't wait to be out of here. The second the last bite of dessert is done, I'm gone. Kids, we're ready. It's time to go. Wife, if you want to stay here, that's fine. There's another bus leaves town in a half an hour. Maybe you can catch that one. Look for ways to be genuinely thankful. This next one fits right in with the idea of being a servant. Resist the need to be heard or to be noticed. Let others be honored. How can you ask questions? How can you demonstrate interest in the other people that are there in that room and in that process? Demonstrate honor for them. Because one of the greatest ways that we get to honor people is to listen sincerely when they talk. And I know some of you are thinking, yes, but they don't shut up. All right, that's part of being a servant. So just ask those good questions. Here's another one in advance. If you're taking kids with you, discuss in advance with your children what to expect and what you will expect. This is one case where you can have some legitimate expectations. The time to discuss difficult interactions with your kids is not during the family event, it's before the family event. This is what we expect. I don't care what their kids do, this is what you will do. And if you don't do that, well, you know what? If you don't do that, it's going to be a long ride home. I'm just saying. Have those conversations with your kids in advance. So the action plan, overall, decide in advance how you will give in this setting, decide how you will respond to the challenging situations. And if you must retreat, retreat to a hiding place that's in plain sight. In other words, hide in service. Don't be sulky, mopey. Don't be me and go for a walk for 10 hours. I just use that as an example. I mean, believe it or not, I lacked some social skills when I was younger. It's true. You know, on another week, you'll get to have your own time of confession up here in front of others. Part number three, be an impressionist painter. Don't be concerned with detail. And this has to do with expectations. Women are really good at this. They have this ideal picture of how the whole weekend is going to go, or the whole day is going to go, or the whole evening is going to go. And we're going to go here, and we're going to do this. And he's going to open the door for me. And he's going to see how I'm doing, and he's going to look lovingly into my eyes. And he's going to this, and he's going, you know what I'm talking about, right? But we do that. We have our own different set of expectations. When you paint specifics into the picture of your future, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. Okay, so we're all guys here, so let's talk guy talk for a moment. Remember that evening that I was just talking about with you and your wife? Did you have some expectations? Did you paint some pictures about how the evening was going to end? I'm betting you did. Most men in that circumstance did. They painted a pretty specific picture of how the evening was going to end. You don't need to know the details, right? Here is a fact. The evening doesn't always end that way, does it? Sometimes a good, healthy fight in the car on the way home makes the evening end just like that, right? See, some of you are laughing. Some of you get this, totally. When you paint too specific a picture of how everything is going to play out, what happens? Your expectations are not fulfilled. End of story. There you go. And over a period of time, I think it's helpful to learn that. Be reasonable about your expectations. We're all people. Give some grace. Give some mercy. Point number four. Don't be a combatant with your wife in these settings. And I had to learn this the hard way. Your wife is not necessarily just like her goofy family. Maybe she is, but if you made that mistake, I'm sorry for you. I can't help that. I used to do that. I mean, we would come home from a particularly frustrating weekend, and it's like I'd start to notice all the similarities between her and everything that annoyed me about my in-laws. Yeah, that's right. You said, uh-oh, and that's where it went, because, look, it was a four-hour drive home. There was a lot of time to talk. There was a lot of time to show my wife exactly how much she was like her parents. And it didn't go well. And in fact, she was a different person. So don't make those unnecessary comparisons. I think here's another thing. Realize that your wife sometimes is caught up in this whole thing just the same as you are. There's expectations placed on her. She has to deal with the things. And I mean, you know, sometimes I used to hold it against my wife that we had to go visit her family. And I know some of you don't understand what I'm talking about, but if you do, or if there is that setting where somebody expects something of you, and you start to resent them for the fact that you have to, and I'll tell you what, you and the wife go home together, and it's like the discussions can last weeks after that. Here's something that maybe some of you have come to discover. The things that you say in a moment of anger, and you have long since forgotten, your wife has the immeasurable skill of being able to remember 5 years later. I heard a 20 from the back of the room.
40?
Yeah. 40? So here it is. Here was the final point about this being a combatant. Declare personal truce. Let yesterday's battle be yesterday's. And don't relive it again. Here's the final thing. And I think this is what we all really want. Live each day so that the consequences of living that day will in some way bless the people that you come in contact with. Because tomorrow you're going to, we all do this, tomorrow you're going to look back on today. Are you going to be happy with how you behaved tomorrow when you look back on it? That's a really powerful question that can prevent you from doing. Don't we all say things in the moment because they feel good? Don't we all say things in the moment because we're sure we're right? And maybe we are. Have you ever won the argument today and lost the next 2 weeks of your life in the process? So the question is, how many weeks of your life do you want to lose before you stop winning the argument? Let me just close with these same words that I read to us before, and then we're done. And I hope that something of what we've talked about this morning is useful to you. Put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, put on these things: a compassionate heart, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other, as the Lord has forgiven you, so you must also forgive. Let's pray. Father, thanks for your words and your counsel. I think most of us here in this room this morning would have to confess that at one time or another we haven't followed your counsel well at all. And we've honestly lived to regret it. God, sometimes in the moment, though, we respond out of passion or out of some other emotion and we don't handle things well. Forgive us for that. Help us to remember that tomorrow we do have the chance to make a clean start. Today we have a chance to make a clean start. Father, help us not to be the fool. Help us not to be the person who's wise in his own eyes and who thinks he has all the answers. There's some good, solid wisdom for everyday living, God, that you've given us in your word, and we thank you for that. And you give us this wisdom not to control us or manipulate us, but because you do truly want a rich and satisfying life for each of us. So we thank you for your word and for your love. Amen.